Tonight, I hope you like Lieutenant Saru because we got him. Hope you like Black Goo because we got that too. We got the Red Angel and Spock. Well, don't hold your breath, but Star Trek Discovery After Show starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the Star Trek Discovery After Show, which is something that we wouldn't have been able to say last season because there was an official Star Trek Discovery After Show on CBS All Access. But we are the Star Trek Discovery After Show. I'm Chris Butt. Joined, as always, by Flubber Boys.
How's it going, everybody? I am amazed to be here with you guys. I'm sorry, Drag Wheeling.
Wait, did you say you're embarrassed to be here with us?
Amazed?
Oh, I really thought you said embarrassed.
I'm like, I am so embarrassed.
Where are you supposed
to be?
It's not Valentine's Day. That was last week. You should have been embarrassed.
Right, exactly.
That you had nowhere else.
We did the Wednesday thing, actually. The day before thing, because Star Trek was the more important thing, apparently. I'm going to be single up in this episode.
Anybody in a relationship with any of the three of us knows that Star Trek comes first.
Right. As
especially
always.
For Frank Moran.
Yes, that is correct. There you go. In fact, I only go into Pon Farr, so every 7 years is the only time.
That's it, though?
Every seven years? That is it.
It's time.
No, it's not just time. It's a mock time. Anyway, the title of this episode is The Sound of Thunder, and if we were still playing music at the beginning, probably Thunderstruck by AC/DC, but there's plenty of other ones. Thunder Road by Bruce Springsteen. Yeah.
Thundercats. The intro.
Wow. What a great idea.
We
that
can't
is.
Play sure. copyrighted music, so let's talk about him.
I mean, we'll talk. We'll start singing the song.
Right. We'll hum it along.
Can't play. There is a lot to talk about. As we knew from last week, this was going to be a Saru heavy episode.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was.
I'm going to try and be clever here. It was also a heavy Saru episode. Really dealing with a lot of things here. I don't know. I like the new Saru, who's really, well, I was going to say let his hair down, but I guess his hair all fell out. And
that's true.
Yeah. Let me ask you first, Flobo, just sort of overall, and then we'll break down the episode. Just overall feeling on the episode.
Yeah, I started off like on the edge of my seat. I'm thinking, wow, this is going to be great. You have this interplay of the species. We have more in detail. And we know Saru is like the new looser Saru. I didn't think my interest was held the entire duration of the episode, but there was some moments I kind of dug.
Just some moments. All
just
right.
Some moments, yeah.
Fair enough. What did you think, Frank?
It, I could see myself siding more with Flobo. It was seeing like elements of this series, which is actually bringing back things that they introduce much faster than I would had anticipated to use for other plot points in this episode. So for better or for worse, it was great to see another away mission. But it was also very, very kind of insular and brief, so kind of missed that.
But kind of inconsistent for this era, an away mission that the captain did not beam down for.
Yeah.
You know, and I get it. There was just like, you know, how many humanoids do you want these people to see? Come on. What, Pike has to get in his comfy chair?
Yeah.
Just get down there. Are you a man or not, Chris Pike? That's what I ask him. So we get to see the Kelpian homeworld, which is called Kavanar, and I had to stop for a second because I'm like, not only does this race look like they'd be delicious and drawn butter, but you weren't around last season. That's new to you. Their planet sounds like caviar. I'm like, somebody's just messing with us, you know, with these names. I don't know what the Bahul sounds like, but actually, I think that it sounds like an animated owl movie. It's a fairly obscure reference. But,
oh, I totally get that. The Guardians of Gahul, right?
Yeah, I know. Flobo knows. I thought it was interesting, just sort of the whole dynamic for the episode, just the whole concept of, you know, we knew about the Great Balance, and we knew that the Kelpians were sort of the prey, to a predator on its planet. And we kind of learn a little bit about the backstory, which I'm going to say I didn't think much of prior to this episode. But, you know, in the first couple of minutes, I'm like, oh, I can see why they'd be mad. Because, you know, if he turns into this thing that we already see him early in the episode acting out on a lot of his aggression. You know, like Burnham has to get between him and Captain Pike at one point, and him as in Saru. You know, He's just throwing down. What did you think of this this tougher Lieutenant Saru, Frank?
I guess those are the ramifications you want to see after he had survived the process that he was experiencing in his threat ganglii dropout. So, I mean, it always been that, you know, saying he had felt this absence of fear to see what a Saru like that is. I mean, I guess I'm of two minds. Like, one, I thought, oh, this is going to kind of play out over the course of the rest of the season. But no, the show kind of addressed it much more quicker than I anticipated, which might not be a bad thing. I mean, we kind of resolved that aspect of Saru, and then now we can kind of continue on to see where he goes from there.
Yeah, I mean, because they're like, well, this isn't the Saru show. Everybody knows this is the Spock show. So let's get that out of the way.
But I will say that I like that they, for a change of pace, even though they didn't really follow through with it, but at least they gave him the narration at the beginning of the episode, which is like, all right, yes, it's nice to have somebody other than Burnham do their narration. But then it just kind of dropped off. It just did a little bit.
It is interesting. Yeah, I you know, it's funny until you mentioned that. I actually forgot that it started that way. But I remember thinking that at the beginning. I'm like, okay, this is cool. It would have been fairly interesting to continue to get his narration throughout it. And this is a platform where you're not under constraints for, like, let's cut the narration for time. I mean, this was an hour and 3 minutes, you know. It's not a tidy runtime, you know. It's not right on the mark. So what do you think, Flobo, of this new looser, funkier Saru that we have in this season?
I'm glad there was some sort of change. I mean, it would have been a total missed opportunity if it's ganglia fell out and it was just like a, oh yeah, by the way, kind of a
I'm
thing.
Still scared.
I'm still scared, and it's like, oh, it's more than just ganglia, guys. That'd have been a total waste of my time. So seeing him more, I can't even say machismo, like we said in the chat here. I can't say that word because he's not really a human male, but the idea that he's able to challenge Pike and you see where he's coming from was definitely a cool dynamic, because usually that's a role reserved for Michael. And then we saw that today and was kind of like, all right, you know, Saru got some stones, man. Give it up.
Yeah, and there's even the moment where Pike's waiting for him to get out of the chair. And, you know, he's not doing it as, like, a consciously as any kind of territorial thing. He's just like, oh, right. And, you know, whereas before, you would think that if the captain even came near the bridge, he would jump out of the chair. Like, you want to sit here?
He gets up and looks away. Yeah. If you look at the whole episode, you're kind of like, oh, okay, you found out. Yeah.
Now he's just like, this is a very comfy chair. So I guess we'll have to see if, I don't know, I suppose that he'll take up skateboarding now that he has no fear. What do people say
in space?
What do people say in the chat? Are they liking the tough guy Saru? Can we expect to see a version of the film, the Michael Douglas film, Falling Down with Saru?
I'm going home.
Yeah.
Stress Free K says, Saru is still learning to deal with his newfound machismo, the word I used earlier in my discussion. And Beta Artemis is saying that Pike's side eye when Saru didn't stand up from the chair was classic, a classic moment. And furthermore, Beta also said, Saru shouldn't have argued with the bridge, just like how Michael shouldn't have argued with Georgiou. So back to that dynamic is there with a newfound Saru and his new attitude, as you
say. I mean, it's I don't know. I obviously Captain Pike, Frank, was very tolerant of, you know, you need to get off the bridge, you know, like 5 minutes ago, basically. And I think his instincts were spot on to, you know, it's like, you can't talk during this, and clearly he should have gotten rid of him. But I don't know, this Saru just couldn't help himself, could he?
Well, he's certainly much more capable, even when we see when he's transported onto the other species ship. And the Bahul, his strength, he's able to rip through his restraints. He's got his cool little secondary kind of mutation, so to speak, there with his kind of projectiles.
I thought it was cool to see that. And then also, like, oh, I'm chained up to the wall. Watch this. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was cool to see, and I don't know. I hope this is dealt with more throughout the season, because, as I alluded to earlier, we know that this is the Spock season, and that's going to be really important to the rest of the season going on. But I would like to see him, you know, having trouble. There would probably be moments where it would be really useful to have him sort of be this overly aggressive. But considering the way that he's lived his life up until this point, I think that There's a lot that the writers can do with this, you know, if they have him kind of struggling to, like, you know what, I don't have the, you know, it's almost like he's drunk all the time now. So now he doesn't realize that, like, oh, this is not the time and place for this. He's like, no, he's just going to be like, he's going to be like angry, drunk, ready to get into a bar fight guy all the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think it's pretty cool with also with Michael's relationship with Saru, because I assume when she meets Spock later on, there's going to be that balance of the human side versus Vulcan side. But definitely Saru brings more of the human emotion side of Michael. We had a moment there, I know I'm jumping ahead.
No, it's all right.
On the bridge where she, you know, she had to like reconsider like gunning him down or stunning
him. Well, yeah, she catches up with him in the transporter room.
Right.
And she points it at him. And of course, he's smart enough to go, wouldn't you do it for your brother? And she's like, oh, damn it.
Ballsy on his part. Yeah. And so on the vulnerable side of her part. That was a perfect moment for the
No, game. That was great. Yeah, I agree. That was great character work on both their parts. Mm-hmm. And of course, she had to let him go.
Yeah. There'll be an episode.
I thought it was interesting to get to meet his sister, and we kind of were, it was a little bit of a roller coaster ride with her. Like, I wish you'd never come back. I'm so glad you came back.
That's how it is when I go home to my family. It's like, you're here, take up the trash.
Yeah. You know, Kelpian Thanksgiving is no different than human Thanksgiving. That's a great point. Yeah. Yeah. There's always the one drunk Kelpian off in the back that wants to talk politics. Right. I almost got more specific than that, but it's not
fair. I will say that I do like the location photography they do when we get to see the village, even for the second episode of the season when they went on to that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that away mission there, just the location stuff is great. I'm only imagining the budget of the show doesn't allow them to do it that much, which is more often why you see it on sets or within just the starship.
Yeah, but I guess when you watch this, you realize that the budgets are fairly considerable, because you would think about how often, you know, on I'm not talking about the original series, but in the, you know, the syndicated era, Next Generation onward, when they would go to planets like. They were usually sets. They were staring down, like looking at a matte painting and pretending that it was like, wow, look at that village down there. And like, you mean that painting that's right next to you that you better hope you don't hit, like in an Ed Wood movie?
Or even the Tasha Yar episode. When she dies. That.
Well, that's funny you mentioned Tasha Yar, because we do have that black goo in this episode, the Mahul, which is very reminiscent of how Tasha Yar left us in season one of Next Generation. And I was happy to see her go. Yeah, that's right. I said it. Take it back.
But do you think she could have gotten better with
yes, I think I do think that they could have given her a chance. And I think that we'll go on this tangent for a moment, but I think that they sort of felt bad with the way it all went, because we did obviously see her come back. And I don't know. I think you know, Denise Crosby, I don't think she got a great character. And that happens sometimes on a lot of shows, you know. I mean, there's a great actress, Michelle Forbes. She's on a lot of things, including Battlestar Galactica, Rescue Me, and all these things. And she was on a season of Homicide: Life on the Street, and she was a medical examiner. And the creators were like, yeah, we really should have made her a cop, because we ran out of stuff to do with her, because she's just a medical examiner. So sometimes, it's the roundabout way to say, sometimes on a show, you don't actually give the actor enough to work with, but sometimes you don't serve your character, you know, and that's why you got to break the whole season in the room and see where it's going. But I think that the writers for this show do a good job. They know where it's all going.
Do you?
Crossing fingers, man.
Well, yeah, it's true. I think they know where it's going, and then the showrunner gets replaced, and then you find out it's going somewhere different. Yeah, that sort of thing.
Hot take.
Yeah, well, it's funny that we're talking about this, because I know someone that works on a show that is a spinoff of a movie, I'll say, and the showrunner got fired this week, and they're all going into work tomorrow. I'm like, I guess we're starting over.
Oh, wow.
So it happens, and it happened on this show in its two seasons several times. So,
well, speaking of that, are both of you like happy with the pace in terms of what the overall arc of the season is going to be, both the Red Angel and with Spock?
I'm sorry. I'll just finish my thought and then give Flobo a turn. No, I'm very irritated. I hate the Red Angel. I hate every time it comes up. Yeah. This, at least towards the end, gave us something. But, you know, I thought this was going to be another episode where, oh, they talk about it at the beginning, and then it's like, oh, and then we got caught up in this other thing, and Red what? I don't know what you're talking about. There's no Red Angel. So it was at least a little satisfying, but this is episode 6, and one no Spock, and you know, still the Red Angel gets thrown on. But what were you going to say,
Flo? I think you're seeing more, for me at least, I'm seeing more of the seam work in season two of like what stories are being said today, what's being accelerated, what's being drawn out. I guess, to me at least, it didn't seem that obvious in season one. I was kind of watching and enjoyed it. But definitely was kind of a change of being like, oh, we're just going right to Saru's homeland now? Great. Oh, but Tilly's last week. Oh, she doesn't have that story anymore. We're going back to that. And to me, it's a little bit jarring. You know, you're kind of getting that like hodgepodge. What are we getting this week? What are we going to work on this week? Where's Spock? Dang it. How many Red Angels are there? You know?
Right. I think this is the sort of the difficulty, and you want to service all these cast members, you know. We very briefly deal with, I forget the doctor's name, but Stamets is
Kluber.
Yeah, Kluber. There you go. We very briefly deal with that because you can tell, like, okay, this is going to factor in more. But it's like, you know, was that 2 minutes of screen time?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was enough to go like, something's going on here. Yeah. But, yeah, I think that that's what happens. It's like, yeah, we had a lot of Tilly last week, and then now it's like, she looks really good for a fungus. You know, she seems fine.
You know, post-fungus life.
Yeah, exactly. You know what, though, Flobo? We're all living a post-fungus life. And speaking of post-fungus, Frank has a very important message.
That's right.
I don't quite know what that transition was.
Absolutely.
Frank has a very important message.
You know, folks, before we warp along to our next topic, we just want to say thank you for making us the ESPN of TV Talk. But for us to continue to grow, you know, we actually need your help. So if you're on YouTube right now, hit that thumbs up button and subscribe. And if you're on iTunes, we would love a 5-star rating. But no matter where you are, leave us a comment so you can get involved in the conversation. Being a part of AfterBuzz has meant so much to all of us, and we truly appreciate you supporting us in all that we do. So don't forget to tell your friends and continue to enjoy our shows.
I want to give a shout-out to IDC Warren in the chat. He says, I love the Red Angel story and pace. I'm glad they're taking this long for Spock because I'm here for the Discovery characters and not Spock. So there's kind of point.
Yeah, look, I appreciate that, and I feel like it'll probably work better, you know, when people binge this, you know, towards the end of the season. It's just we know we're getting Spock, and if they didn't talk about him so much, it would be fine,
right?
And it's just like either give him to us or not. I mean, I guess it would be so much more infuriating if we knew that Spock wasn't going to be on the show. Like Spock was never going to be on the show. Like. One of the shows I talk a lot about on Marvel TV Weekly, which I do on Sundays, is this show called The Gifted on Fox. And the one thing you know about that show, you're never going to see any of the X-Men. You will never see a single X-Man on that show. And it's not going to happen. We know we're going to get Spock. We don't know how many episodes, but we just know that they're going to take their time in doing it. And I appreciate seeing, especially Saru, who just a couple weeks ago, I thought we'd lost him forever. And he's, you know, really a standout character for me from this show. He might be my favorite character on the show, but now the Orca is gone. But I don't know. I appreciate that they're trying to service the rest of the crew more. I mean, the first season was really Burnham season. And, you know, she's front and center in all these episodes, but it's good to get to see some of this. So,
but how many episodes, ideally, given we got, what, 8, 9 left, I think? 9 left. Is there 16 this season?
It's 16, I believe.
So how many episodes would you want to see Spock in this season that you'd feel satisfied? Like, all right, yeah, I got my Spock fill.
Let's put it this way. If he's in all of them the rest of the season, then I'll be like, all right, I think that's too much Spock. I love Spock. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. I've never written a book called I'm Not Spock or I Don't Like Spock. Yeah. I haven't done either of those things. I like Spock. In fact, I grok Spock.
Hello.
Well, it's John Lovitz wore a T-shirt in the famous William Shatner Get a life sketch. Yeah, that's what his shirt said. It's just a little. What do you call those? Those little footnotes there for people keeping score at home. But yeah, I don't want too much Spock. That's for sure. I think if we got him in half the episodes left, it might even be a little too much. But I'd be like, all right, that'll be good. Let's move on. But don't make us think he's coming back every week. You know, like just. You do a Spock story, and you know he can take Pike with him. I love Pike, but you know they can get back on the Enterprise. That's where they belong. But what do you think, Flobo? How much Spock are you willing?
I was trying to count in my head. I was like, we'll be at least 5 episodes, but I think there was like, 8 left after this week, so.
So this was 6, so does that mean there's 9 more or 10 more?
That's right. If this episode was 6, then we have 10 to make
16.
So 5 seems realistic.
Yeah, I would say between 5 and 7. The fact you establish him and maybe get a week in between and do some side story, but.
That would be fine, too, if they don't have all the Spock stories in a row. You know, right. It's like if we see him for a couple and he's like, all right, I got to go off and do some Spock stuff. But then they have him. Then they have him at the end of the season. And, you know, maybe that's when Pike moves on. Because we still need our captain. We need our real captain of Discovery. I mean, Pike's doing a great job.
What is Spock stuff? I'm just curious. What would that be?
What is Spock stuff?
I don't know, man.
Have you ever seen him go into a tank with a humpback whale? I mean, there's a lot of things that...
My thoughts are your thoughts.
Yeah. Exactly. that's part of what the question is. You know, this idea as it relates to the Red Angel. And for me, it's a little convoluted because I was like, wait, we learned all this stuff about it? Do I just like, is it like Manchurian Candidate for me when you say Red Angel, it like snaps for me and then I just like, I don't know, I go into a trance and I don't actually know what happens? Because there's this realization or this revelation at the end of the episode that it's because Saru has, you know, extra sensitive vision that it's a person in some kind of high tech suit that it is described as beyond the current capabilities of Starfleet. So that implies, Frank, that it comes from
the future.
The future. All the way from the year 2000.
That's right.
In the year.
Thank you. boy, I hope this show's not audited tonight. Anyway, we're just having fun, though. Yeah, this is why I hope people are enjoying this in the chat. We're just trying to process it all through the prism of pop culture. So yes, we're getting this from this idea that this is someone from the future.
Which I'm a sucker for time travel. I love that when you put that kind of trope into a show, it is fantastic. I mean, we had that, they did kind of with the Enterprise, where we had that, you know, the person coming from the future kind of meddling with the past. Enterprise, you know, kind of got a little frustrating in terms of paying off that story.
Sure.
I'd be curious to see how this one would pay off that if they continue to go that direction, mm-hmm. which it seems like they are.
Look, arguably, I'm not going to say the two best, but two of the best Star Trek movies are Star Trek IV and First Contact, which both are time travel heavy. When you think of, just in general, time travel as some of the City on the Edge of Forever stands out from the original series. So I think that they realize that. What do you think about this idea, Flobo, that the Red Angel is someone from the future who's really heading back to do some very specific, handiwork? It's like another time travel show. It's like Quantum Leap. It's like they've got a mission and they're trying to fulfill it.
Honestly, I wasn't thinking about that theory at all, but I'm reading the chat here and Beta Artemis says crackpot theory is Pike is the Red Angel from the future trying to save lives with the help of Talosians. So that was pretty a cool idea.
That's a pretty cool idea.
Yeah, I never thought of that before.
I mean, you run into a problem with, I guess, the fact that, I guess they could heal him, you know, Frank. I mean, he doesn't necessarily have to still be in the chair with the blinking light. Sure. But
that whole mech suit could be an extension of the chair.
But suit had childbearing hips. Did it not? Okay.
Are you trying to say was there junk in that trunk?
I'm just saying, Pike may have it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's true. that's true. We haven't seen him, you know, running on the ship in form-fitting clothes. What about the idea that this could be another visit in another Star Trek series? And I'm just putting this theory out there mostly to annoy Frank, that this is a future Spock, much like we got in the J.J. Abrams movie.
Yes. There was part of me as we were talking about this that the idea was like, if this turns out to be somebody from this cast that we find out has like traveled back in time to right some various wrongs.
Yeah.
Throughout this point of Starfleet history, at least, I'll be a little frustrated with that one.
So
like it's Burnham that has gone back. Like,
but it's Burnham from like 10 years in the future, like not like way in the future.
Or even 50, 60 years. Okay. Where she's an older person who's now using this opportunity to go back to correct a wrong that didn't happen with Saru's race, never got this chance of freedom and ended up being, the genocide happened.
You know, they just like go that. For a callback from earlier. What if it's Tasha Yar?
That would be great. All right, then for that.
Yeah, so that's a payoff? Yeah. Lobo pointed out the childbearing hips. True. I'm just putting theories. I'm just advancing theories for what it could possibly be that we're seeing.
Burnham would be cheap, though. I think if that was Burnham, I would be like, really? What can she do? I would feel upset if that was me.
Yeah.
And I like Burnham, too. I'm one of the few guys that she likes.
I don't dislike her. Yeah. I don't find her the most interesting person on the show, sure. Which – you know, for her to be the center of the show, you know, I don't need it to be as focused on her, but I do think she's a good character. It's interesting. And a lot of what we talked about last season is that this idea that this person you've never heard of was Spock's adopted sister.
Right.
You know, it's just like, it's very tough to swallow that because you're like, we've never heard of her. Right. We've never heard of any of this in Spock's history. You know?
Well, I feel like, much like the second season, our first season was like a big reveal of the Mirror Universe, really dialing into a beloved Star Trek concept and trying to do a new spin on it and the way they told the story over the course of the season. I feel like the Red Angel's identity is going to have some kind of connection to either a Star Trek concept that we're seeing in a whole new light. So it's way like, oh, cool, they used this idea. All right, awesome. Or it has to be somebody that we've seen or know about so that the identity of the Red Angel is not.
It's number one.
Not a surprise.
I'm just kidding.
There you go. We barely saw number one.
Yeah. I mean, they had a stunt casting, but that'd be a weird way to explain that. No.
Yeah. So I feel like, you know, we're going to have to keep guessing, but towards the end of this episode, we'll talk about what we saw in the coming attractions for next week.
It's a beard.
just saying. Let's circle back to the Kelpian Bahul storyline because I thought it's a very Star Trek concept, you know, because you're dealing with, they don't call it the Prime Directive, it's the General Order 1, but they're dealing with interfering in the cultural evolution of a planet, but also, I guess, literal evolution of a species. Captain Pike gets really hands-on in terms of what the Enterprise does here. Sorry, what Discovery does here. He belongs in the Enterprise. That's why I said that. You know, and it addresses this idea of the Bahul basically, you know, I mean, they have systematic genocide of the Kelpians at a certain point in their life so that they can prevent themselves from being exterminated. So it asks this great question. It's like, are you doing this to preserve yourself? And again, this is what we were saying earlier. Like, I saw that this is where it was going, but it was still kind of cool. And they had like the nice graphic where it was like, this is what the planet was like. And then look what happened. And it reversed. So I thought it was interesting. You know, it asks that great philosophical question. The Enterprise is like, well, do we stop this species from genocide of this other species who will ultimately be the prey and, you know, overtake the Bahul? But point being made, technologically superior, so they'll be able to defend themselves better. So there's a lot of minutiae in that. Flobo, what did you think of all that?
To me, it was so great. So you have like their Red Angel mission, and you have the General Order 1, and you have the they are established as starships in the sky, but you can't make too much of a play there. Just reminds me of like a kid reading Superman comics. You know, like how much restraint do you have if you have all the power in the world? So to me, the dynamic of the Kelpians and the Bahul was definitely. I was surprised. I was on board with that. I was like, okay, I see the switch of that, and that explains why some people go and have their moment and their evolution. But to me, I think some of the nuance gets lost when you have this ticking clock in the background, being like, oh, so really going crazy. He's going macho. We need.
Oh, he goes full Hulk.
He goes full Hulk, yeah. And it kind of like muddies it a bit. But I thought the idea on paper was great at the time going in for sure.
What did you think about – well, just basically the same question as I gave Flobo,
It was – I mean, I guess it's an interesting concept, although I felt like Bahul not that smart in the sense because when they tell Saru what they're going to do, like, oh, yeah, we're going to, you know, analyze you and figure out what's going on and then we're going to get rid of you. he just drops back down into the lake, and then that's it. So Saru's able to like smash all this stuff, get out of his restraints, start doing all this stuff, and broadcast a signal that can accelerate the evolution of his entire species. And they do nothing for the longest time. I'm like, nobody's watching. Nobody gets an alerts when things start going wrong up in this containment unit that you've got them in.
Yeah, you'd think, you know, I mean, if this species is so big on surveillance, you'd think that it's like, well, you know, this guy that we got prisoner who is the biggest threat to our way of life in 2,000 years, let's keep an eye on what he's doing. But you referenced what I was talking about, which is like, you know, the Enterprise, again, I said Enterprise, Discovery, helping, you know, boosting the signal. And like, yeah, let's just go ahead and have... I guess they said 63% of the Kelpians on the planet, which I thought was interesting. That wasn't all of them. I guess they weren't all near those receptors. But then, so they all advanced to that point that Saru is at. And that's hardcore interference, you know? Right. Yes, what you have done is to the benefit of the Kelpians, but... You know, 2,000 years, things have been there had been balance.
Sure.
And Starfleet, you know, this is the argument against Starfleet.
The Vahari, the Express Vahari was kind of weird. Like, I don't know. I felt like Saru's thing was this drawn out process. He was feeling not so great, but this one's kind of like a, ow, yeah, this, I'm over it.
This was drive through.
Yeah, yeah, it was, you know,
yeah, like in and out. Yeah, exactly.
Kind of misses the fact.
I mean, because I see what you're saying with the 2,000 years has been balanced, but I mean, I guess the kind of balance where, you know, one race is kind of systematically eliminating another when they get to a certain point. So it's like, is that truly balanced? I mean, I guess, you know, it's, you know, certainly both sides are a little bit, yeah, the Bahul a little bit stuck in their ways because they're not given the opportunity to think like, after 2,000 years, that's like much like saying anybody back, cavemen, much more savage, much more, but now if you were to do that same thing to us, give or take, society is a little crazy right now in terms of mob mentalities and things. But,
yeah.
But you know, to hold us under judgment for things that happened 2,000 years ago, not exactly fair.
No, I mean, and yeah, to the point you made, it's like, well, someone could go back in time and be like, you know, let's give the Neanderthals a leg up. Let's try and help. Let's give them gunpowder. Let's see what happens. Although they probably just shoot themselves in the face. But still, I think that, I don't know. It's definite meddling, and it's like exactly, you know, and I did like that we had I guess that's from one of the short treks where we see Saru and Captain Georgiou, sort of the arrangement that they had that, it's like you can't come back, but there he was right back at it.
Just want to give a shout out to the chat. Pan Wyvern asked, okay, but it brings up the question, is genocide considered balance? Or control genocide, I guess, in this case.
I mean, it's a forced artificial balance, but yeah, you've just tipped the balance the other way, and again, it'll be over time. And look, the Bahul do have warp capability for 20 years, so if there's that kind of threat, they can leave. You know, I mean, I guess they shouldn't have to, but you know, it's because you know, basically, you've kind of, not to get overly political here, but you've basically created sort of like a West Bank and Gaza Strip situation here, where it's like, you know, here comes Starfleet, and is like, all right, we're just gonna flip it around. These are the guys that are now gonna be the predators, and you guys are gonna have to run away, and we're gonna go, we're out. All right, whatever you guys want to do here. I think our work is done, all in a day's work for Starfleet. And I hope that we revisit this. I feel like we'd have to do it in a future season. You know, I don't think there's enough time, and you know, I don't think we even need it. I just wouldn't want to abandon this.
Can I ask you just a question that's a little bit off kilter? Do you think that Saru's sister is going to show up in a spinoff? I felt like her story was set up to be used somewhere else.
No, I think her story is set up for them to have her back on a future episode.
Fair enough.
You know,
fair enough.
In some way, maybe calling for help because something goes wrong. You know, and how do you even have this kind of technology? Well, she was at least aware of it. I don't know. What do you think, Frank? You think they're setting her up for to see her again?
I would feel that we would at least get some point of revisiting. I mean, certainly this show has surprised me this season and how quickly they are addressing things that I thought might be prolonged till later in the season.
Right.
So I wouldn't be surprised if we get to see them once again. But I also thought it was interesting with Saru and with Giorgio meeting them. Very similar to Pike and the gentleman from the second episode who had been maintaining that signal from the downed spaceship.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where it's kind of like the flip where he now has these answers but doesn't really have the opportunity to go. But Saru, yes, you can get these answers, but the price is you can never come back and tell anybody anything you've ever done. So I thought that was kind of an interesting choice, how both captains kind of approach that same situation.
Yeah. No, that is an interesting parallel. Wanted to talk about, I like to get my Easter eggs from the Den of Geek website. The title of the episode, The Sound of Thunder, is very close, almost identical to a short story by Ray Bradbury called A Sound of Thunder. And the reason why they point out the parallel in that story, time-traveling big game hunters accidentally alter history by stepping on a butterfly in the Mesozoic era, which is, you know, a butterfly effect sort of thing that we've heard a lot about. You know, an amazing film by Ashton Kutcher. But yes. In addition to that, there is that concept. And, I mean, that the time travel aspect is, you know, an allusion to the Red Angel. But, I mean, just the way that we keep talking – I keep talking about it anyway – the way that they just interfered in this planet, in this planet's history, you know. Anyway, so I find that to be very interesting.
The one thing I'm also curious too is how the planet that had blown up a couple episodes ago that they retained the data, all the data storage that they had
there. The sphere.
Yeah, it is becoming like almost like the cheat code for the season where they can find out any answers that they want.
An interesting theory that I was reading about I don't think it was this one. It was on another summary that I was reading after I watched it, that the sphere kind of explains how the database, the computer in Star Trek, all iterations, has all of this information about places they haven't actually gone to yet, you know. So especially this time frame that we're in right here, so they have all this information because of this sphere. So I thought that was kind of an interesting, you know, we've called out a few times this season in particular on Discovery where they've kind of explained like, well, here's why things are going to be, you know, different in the original series versus right now, little things like that. So I always like to think about that stuff, and I don't know if that's quite it, but it certainly, you know, answers it from a logical standpoint.
True, but was that even a question you even had until you read that? Because I never really thought about like, well, how did they get all this information about all these planets and systems and stuff in the original series or Next Generation? Never really thought about it. I figured like they must have explored and cataloged and all this stuff as you normally do.
Yes, but if you were traveling to where no man or no one has gone before, how does your computer know where you are?
It's also like finding out like the Millennium Falcon's nav computer is like, okay, great. We know the story behind this. Did I need to know it? Okay, whatever.
Yes. Yes, I did.
Yes,
I needed to know.
We are moving. I need to know.
Tyler's talking about how Section 31 believes that the Red Angel is capable of time incursions. So that's the time travel aspect. Time incursions is definitely something that we get a few times throughout the course of Star Trek. I think, Frank, you were talking about the temporal Cold War from Enterprise. Mm-hmm. There's a two-part Voyager episode called Year of Hell. But, of course, the most famous time incursion created the J.J. Abrams verse, which is the destruction of the USS Kelvin, thus the Kelvin timeline. So they like to deal with these time incursions, and I just feel like I want it to be on like a level where I think we're being set up to be disappointed by this Red Angel, because I'm already annoyed with the Red Angel. And, they have to pay it off. And so far, I don't know, this show hasn't really let me down in huge ways throughout the course of the season and a half or whatever. But I just don't – I don't know. I don't feel like the Red Angel is going
to
pay off.
What would it take for you to be like, oh my gosh, that Red Angel was amazing?
That it's a present-day William Shatner.
What? That would be fantastic.
But as TJ Hooker.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
But I understand what you're saying, because the when you tease out a story element for that long, it does. It, you can't help but build viewers' expectations.
Right.
And it's that fine line to, you know, you can pay, you can delay it for a little bit, but then when do you know to pay it off that it satisfies the viewers and it doesn't, like, they aren't exasperated, nor are they bored by your revelation.
Right. And look, it's tough to do on episodic television. I mean, in the course of, you know, comic books, you can do it like over 30 issues. Like there's like, there's a little glint in Jean Grey's eye now that she's this Phoenix character. Eh, but she's still Jean. There's nothing to worry about. And then, oh my God, she ate a planet, you know? Yeah. So, you know, these things build over time. And I think that, yeah, the timeline on episodic television can make it all seem overly accelerated. Look, I want to enjoy it. I want to be impressed by it. I want to think they did a great job. You know, there have been people in the chat that chastise us because we actually like this show.
I know, right?
I don't know why they watch our show if they don't like the actual show.
How dare you?
Yeah, but we appreciate all of it. And, you know, all comments are welcome, you know, unless they're harassing, derogatory, or you don't like me. No, it's fine.
I'd like to be harassed. It's fine.
Do you want to do a really special segment?
Yes.
All right. Today is for the ABCD, the above and beyond the Call of Duty. That's what we talk about, the one person that went above and beyond in today's episode. I want to ask you, Frank, what do you think? What do you think the one character is terrible.
I keep forgetting your name because we so rarely get to see her. But our robotic
oh, she was team great.
Emis? Is it Emis? Was that her name?
Arium.
Yes. They were great. I mean, she went through that whole database lickety-split and found that info they needed.
Oh, yeah. And Tilly was definitely like, hey, I know stuff, too. So it's a very quick moment, but I thought it was a funny Tilly moment.
She's been the one, maybe because she's so visually striking, but the one I've been most intrigued to learn more about. I mean, this is just a bare sliver of just any sort of thing more than just an extra line. I would like to see more, but I like what I got.
What if her backstory ends up being that it's just you know, someone who's had a psychotic break, and it's just like a cosplay character that she plays, and like none of this is, she's just like, yeah, we don't know why she does this, but we just let her do it because it's good for her mental state, and she's a good officer.
Where's the cosplay sport in space?
The episode starts with her just putting on everything at the beginning, and you're like, what is this?
Or she like rushes out and she forgot to like rub it all the way in. No, I would. I agree, because it's visual. That's a character that I think at some point we're going to get to know more about.
Hopefully.
For me, it just has to be Saru, because not only does he Hulk out, but he basically saves his species. And, you know, I would say there's no one who's played a bigger role in the history of his planet and the evolution of either of those species than Saru. So
one quick note about Saru, when he got like banished from the bridge and he goes downstairs and he like dips off. I forgot he still sashays when he walks.
So
like being so macho.
He still has his mannerisms.
It was totally awesome.
It wasn't until I saw that walk from behind, I was like, man, he walks like George Jefferson.
He is moving on up, though, to be fair. Let us know in the chat if someone stands out to you or any of your thoughts here. If you're watching live, we'll try and include you in our final minute. But if not, and you're watching the archive, we will try to include your comments in next week's show. And I've done a lot of work online trying to find out if there is going to be a hiatus during the course of the season. I still haven't found out yet. Now, we saw the preview for next week's episode, which we'll use our final minute to talk about. But it did not say, like, you know, for our, I don't know what you would call it, our Mardi Gras break, or what break you would call it. You know, there's always like there's like winter break in shows now. Right. Is this a spring break? But they didn't say that, you know, it's like our last episode before that. But what we do see, Frank, whose beard do we see?
We see Spock's beard!
The chat hates beards, but Spock's beard will be next week.
And, I mean, if we don't get him and they put that in the car, tune in next week. It's going to be great. I was like, all right, yes, we're going to get some Spock. We're going to get some more on this Red Angel. So I don't know, I'm ready. 7 episodes in, you better tell me about this.
Well, IDIC Warrior says no hiatus. I think it's time. It's definitely time. You can't be pulling it out another swerve if that's the case. It's like, no, Spock, you know?
Yeah, no, no, no. I do think he's going
to. It's going to be a Bryce backstory episode out of nowhere. I'm like, what?
we'll have a lot of Spock to talk about next week and, you know, in theory. So we will talk about that then. And thanks to everybody in the chat. We had a great chat. I love that people stay up so late with us.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
And they stayed up late with us on Valentine's Day. In any case, we will be back next week at 10 Pacific on Thursday. But until then, Frank, where do people find you?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. And real quick, Screen Rant did a ranking of every Star Trek movie, worst to best.
Yeah.
Let us know in the chat how you feel about the these rankings there, all 13 films.
You know, I saw that, and let's try to carve some time out next week for that. They went from worst to best?
Worst to best.
So they went from Star Trek V. It's so hard, though.
No.
It's Insurrection or Nemesis.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's difficult. I questioned their worst one. So.
God, but Star Trek V is so bad. Anyway. Flobo, where do people find you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at Flobito and on Twitter at Flobo Boys, where I am doing the challenge of thinking about listening or watching a next Star Trek series. Which series would that be? Please reach out to me. Let me know.
Next Animated Generation, series. Start with two. Start with season two of The Next Generation.
Twitter, guys. I said Twitter.
Flobo, start with Next Generation season two. And me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll see you next Sunday. Till then, live long and prosper.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.